tuning in to the Next Level Church podcast. For more information, check out our website at nextlevelchurch.net.
Good morning. Happy New Year to you. Very excited for you guys to be here. I missed you last week. The snow, even the threat of snow, was going to cancel everything in Virginia, and so we weren't here last week, and I missed you, but glad that the snow has melted, and glad to have you today. I want to invite all of you to dig a little bit deeper in what you're about to experience. I hope you love what you're about to experience, but I want you to dig in a little bit more. And the way that you can do that is by following along in a free app called YouVersion. And this is an app that I use every day to get into the Bible, learn more about God, but it's also an app that allows you to dig in a little bit more with what you're about to experience. There's a place to take some notes. The scriptures I'm going to cover are in there, as well as some other fun stuff like a poll and some other good stuff. So you can check that out at on the steps are up there on the screen. Well, today we're kicking off a brand new series entitled Identity Discovery. And identity is something that is incredibly important, but you may not know how important it is. Identity is a word that we don't talk about a lot. It is not a buzzword. There are some buzzwords out there that everyone talks about and thinks about, and identity is not one of those. So this whole subject series is one that it may not have captured you just by the title. You may not have said, oh, I got to get there to hear this, because there's a great chance that you don't know how important your identity truly is. The truth of the matter is, though, that our identity helps us discover what our purpose is in this life. And for most of us, we wander around from year after year, birthday after birthday, kind of wandering around and trying to figure out what is our purpose? Why do we exist? And so we have about 70 years on average to live in this world. On average, about 70 years. And in that 70 years, a lot of time is spent trying to figure out what is my purpose? Why am I here? And so I just want to throw that out to you. A question for you. Why are you here? Why do you exist? You're here in this day and age, in 2016, for a specific purpose, for a reason. And the question is, why? What is your purpose? Why do you exist? Knowing your identity helps you understand why God put you on the earth in this moment, at this time, in 2016. In the next few weeks, we're going to unpack how to discover what your identity is in. When you discover what your identity is, it is going to help you have so much more peace in this world. It's going to give you a reason to wake up in the morning, and it's going to help you worry a lot less and freak out a whole lot less. Your identity is incredibly important. Our text for today is the one that's going to kind of kick things off and help us start this journey. It comes from a guy that is pretty important to us. It comes by an author by the name of Matthew. And Matthew is important to us because he was one of Jesus' 12 disciples. Jesus had 12 guys that he handpicked to come follow him. And so Matthew was an eyewitness. He didn't hear about Jesus from someone else. He literally followed him. And so when he writes about the events in Jesus' life, this isn't because he heard some story that his parents or grandparents or a friend told him. He's writing about the things that he saw and he experienced. Now, what makes Matthew a little bit unique is that Matthew was a tax collector. Now, this is just for free. This is just extra, okay? For those of you that like to know a little bit more about the Bible, what makes Matthew really unique is that a tax collector was hated by the Jewish community. The reason is because if you were a tax collector, you worked for the Roman government. And so the Jewish population saw you as a traitor to the Jews. So this is a guy that is not very well liked. And you add on to that, most tax collectors, because they worked for Rome, knew that they could get away with stealing money from the Jewish people. So tax collectors were some of the most hated people in all of Israel. And Jesus goes to one of the most hated people, one of the people that if you would have picked him for your team, they would have said, you are crazy. You are cuckoo for Cocoa Puffs. Like, don't pick that guy. He should be the last one picked in dodgeball. He's not the one that you want following you. Stay away from the tax collector. And yet Jesus walks up to this tax collector and he says, hey, would you follow me? Would you become a part of my team? And Matthew's life was radically changed because he saw not just what Jesus said and what Jesus did, but he saw Jesus literally die and then 3 days later rise from the grave. And that changed Matthew's life. And so Matthew writes to us this unique perspective, someone that literally knew Jesus. And he writes to us something that has a ton to do with your identity. So now that we've got our introduction out of the way, would you help me honor the text by standing to your feet? We're going to read it out loud. We're going to read it loud and proud. Matthew 16, 24 through 26, this is an all play. I want to hear everyone reading it nice and loud. It says, then Jesus said to his disciples, Whoever wants to be my disciple must deny themselves and take up their cross and follow me. For whoever wants to save their life will lose it, but whoever loses their life for me will find it. What good will it be for someone to gain the whole world yet forfeit their soul? Or what can anyone give in exchange for their soul? Now that we've read the text, let's ask God to speak to our hearts. Would you pray with me? God, we humbly come before you, and we just admit that so often we get in your way. And so right now, we're just asking that you remove the distractions from this room. We ask that you remove the distractions from our minds and our hearts, and we are asking that you would speak to us in a personal way. And God, would you give us the courage to obey you no matter how hard it is? And God, I just ask that the words of my mouth and the meditation of my heart will be acceptable in your sight. Oh Lord, you are my rock and my redeemer. In Jesus' name, amen. You may be seated. I want to give you some strange phenomenons that are some things that I think you've seen before. I want to give you some things that at first glance, you're not going to see how they have any connection. You might even wonder, well, that one thing has nothing to do with this other thing. But I want to tell you that these things that I'm about to present to you are incredibly connected. And I guarantee at least one of the things I'm about to show you, you have experienced it or seen it in our culture. And you've asked the question, why? Why do people do this? These are some weird kind of phenomenons, but a bunch of people do these things. Like, for example, if you're a sports fan and you've ever followed a franchise or a team and you've watched them for years and you saw an athlete come in as a rookie and then hit their prime and you were just like their biggest fan and they could do no wrong and they won championships for you, but then they hit 30 and after 30 you start to see their peak performance decline. And some of these amazing athletes hold on just a little too long. Like, how many of you know who Shaquille O'Neal is? Just raise your hand if you know who Shaquille O'Neal. Okay, that's most of us. And if you know about Shaquille O'Neal, most likely you picture him like this on the Los Angeles Lakers. This is Shaquille O'Neal. That's the way I like to remember Shaq, as one of the most dominant big men, one of the most dominant athletes in the history of the world. But even if you follow sports, there's a great chance that you remember Shaq on the Lakers, but you do not remember Shaquille O'Neal on the Celtics. This is a picture of Shaq on the Celtics. Shaq in 1999 averaged 30 points. In 2010, for the Celtics, he averaged 9 points. And if you're a fan like me, to watch someone who would play almost like a god become a mere mortal and come off the bench and barely put up any points, it just made me wonder why. Like, Shaq, why did you go to the Celtics? Why did you hold on? If you've ever followed an athlete and seen them play past their prime, you've asked why. You just don't get it. You're like, you're already a millionaire. You've already won titles. Why are you playing? I don't want to remember you like an average person. I want to remember you like a superstar. Or maybe there's this one. Have you ever seen a celebrity who just got a little bit too addicted to plastic surgery? Like this picture. That is the same person. That is Kenny Rogers, for those of you that have not seen The Gambler. You got to know when to hold them, know when to fold them, know when to walk away, know when to run. You never. When you're sitting at the table, there'll be time enough for count when the deal is done. Everyone under 30 was like, what in the world just happened? What was that? Okay. Kenny Rogers is a very famous country singer. And especially in a time period where he was making these movies called The Gambler, he had a song that was, it just was all over our culture. Like, so many people know this. And Kenny Rogers on the left is the one we like to remember. Kenny Rogers on the right, we kind of say, why? Like, why, Kenny, did you do that to yourself? Like, why did you allow plastic surgery just to keep going? Here's another phenomenon that maybe you've noticed. Have you ever been to a place like Walmart? Why is that funny? People laugh just at Walmart. Right? Have you ever been to Walmart, though, and you're like walking around and you're minding your own business and you see someone and you're like, wow, they've got stuck in the 80s. Like, their clothes, their hair, It was way in style in 1980, but today it just looks like they're holding on to something. Like, maybe you've seen someone today that is still holding on to this look. Now, I put this picture because I think it's really funny. That is actually The Rock, and The Rock did not get stuck in the 80s or 90s. But if you've been to Walmart, you've seen someone who's holding on to this look, where it's like, okay, you might have been really cool in 1989, but it's 2016. It's time to retire the fanny pack. Like, get rid of it. Or maybe you've known someone who was in a relationship. And even if the relationship wasn't that great, when the relationship ended, this one person couldn't let go of the relationship. And maybe while they were in the relationship, they would always talk about how bad it was or just how their heart was broken or how they didn't like certain things. But now that the relationship is over, this person just kind of seems stuck and hung up on it. And not just like a couple weeks after the relationship. I'm talking about years after. They can't move on. In fact, this meme is a perfect description of those people who just can't move on. Check this out. When you're 48 weeks into his new girlfriend's photos and you accidentally hit the like button. That right there. If you can't relate to that, good, you're probably at a healthy place. But there are some of you who can't get over that relationship. And when you hear they're dating, you're checking out their photos and you're trying to hold on to and you're feeling jealous and envious. And there's just this moment where you're like, they can't get over it. And if you're a friend to someone who's holding on to an old relationship, it's made you say, why? Why can't you get over that moment? Now, at first glance, all of these things seem like they have nothing to do with each other, but I would argue that they have a ton to do with each other. I think the answer to why all of these things happen, why athletes hold on way past their prime, why people hold on to certain fashion and won't let it go, why people get plastic surgery or the comb over. Have you ever looked at someone with a comb over and just said, why? Like, let it go. You're not fooling anyone. I think the answer to all of these questions is identity. Your identity. At some point in a person's life, something happens to them that is such a transformational and formative thing that they hold on to it. It was a moment where someone said, you look beautiful, and they held on to that. And because at that moment they felt beautiful, they are not changing their look for anything. They're going to hold on to that look for the rest of their life. Or it's the athlete who is, for so many years has been known by his skills. All of a sudden, when they start fading, he can't give it up because his athlete or her identity is wrapped up in their skills. Maybe you can't relate to plastic surgery or to an athlete, but maybe you can relate to your job. That at some point in your life, your worth, your identity has been wrapped up in your job. And when you find success, when the boss praises you, or when you're hitting sales marks, or when you're doing okay in your job, you have some self-worth and you feel, I'm okay, I'm doing all right. I feel good about myself. But when things go bad with your job, it starts to make you feel like you're less of a person. And there's something in your life, maybe it's a relationship, maybe it's an event, but there is something that you've started to wrap your identity around. And there's a major problem with wrapping your identity in things. Everything that you can wrap your identity in, anything that you can see, anything that you've just said, hey, this is who I am, this is a part of me, everything is fading. And so when you wrap your identity in something, the reason that it's difficult and the reason it causes you so much turmoil is because that thing that you're trying to hold on to is passing away. It is dying. It is fading. Identities formed in anything non-eternal are destined to crumble. If you form your identity in anything non-eternal, if you form your identity in your looks, I hate to break it to you, but you're not going to look the way that you do today in 15 years. There's going to be some things that you may not like about the aging process. It happens to all of us. And you can either embrace it or you can try to hold on to something because your identity is formed in your looks. Or maybe it's your job. If you try to hold on to a job and something changes with our economy or something changes and you're no longer able to perform at the level that you think you should perform in, if your identity is wrapped up in your job, you will crumble. Everything around us is dying, it is fading, it is not getting better with time. And yet so many of us form our identity, our worth, our purpose in things that are disappearing. And so often we worry and we freak out and we try to control things. And the answer to that, the reason why we do this, is because we have a misplaced identity. That our identity is in something that is crumbling or has the potential to crumble, and it's not in something eternal. In our text that we read just a little while ago, I want to break it down for you because this is Matthew recording something that Jesus said to some of his followers. And I want to give you just a little bit more context about this verse, that this verse is coming after a time period where Jesus asked his 12 disciples who they say that he is. And one of them spoke up and said, "You are the Messiah. You are the one that has been promised to us. You are God's son." He said that with boldness and with clarity. And Jesus was like, ding, 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 survey says, that is the number one answer. But then Jesus follows that up and he says, "I'm telling you guys, in just a few moments, in just a few days, in just a few weeks, I'm going to be led off to be crucified." And one of Jesus' disciples, a guy by the name of Peter, is like, not on my watch. I won't let that happen. And Jesus rebukes Peter, and then he follows that rebuke up with this line from our text. It's Matthew 16:24. It says, "Then Jesus said to his disciples, 'Whoever wants to be my disciple must deny themselves and take up their cross and,'" what's that word? "Follow me." Look at your neighbor and say, "Follow the leader." Look at the person who just said that to you and say, "That was pathetic." Look at your neighbor and say it like you're actually awake and that you're ready to get something out of this talk. I want to hear you say it like you believe it. Say, "Follow the leader."
Follow the leader.
Follow the leader. The key to your identity is what or who you are following. Jesus said, if you want to be my disciple, you must what? The key to your identity is in who or what you follow. Jesus said to his disciples, if you want to be a disciple. Now, what is a disciple? That's not a term that we use today. And so maybe you're like, I don't even know what that is. What does that mean? Well, the basic breakdown of the word disciple is simply a learner. And so if you're here today and you would say, I'm not anti-Jesus, I'm not opposed to Jesus, I would say that I'm a Christian. If you're in that camp today, you would be a disciple. You're someone who is learning about God, learning about Jesus. And so he's saying to those that are wanting to follow him. Now, this isn't a word to those that are like, you know, I don't really want to follow you. I don't have any interest in you. If that's the case and you're here today, sit back, relax, and just hang out. Because you get to hear a message that's not directed at you. This is directed at those that would say, yes, I'm a follower of Jesus. I want to do what Jesus tells me to do. Jesus calls those people that are learners a disciple. And he says something that is incredibly controversial. He says, if you want to follow me, you've got to take up your cross and die. Now, a common thinking in Jesus' day was that if you followed God, it led to blessing and it led to riches and it led to the good life. And that's a thinking that has not died in Jesus' day. It's a thinking that comes across out in America a lot, that if I'm doing what I'm supposed to do, and if I'm a good person, if I go to church and I give a little bit of money to the church and I say a few prayers, then God will bless me and I will live a good life. And Jesus destroys that by saying, listen, if you want to follow me, die. Not just die anyway, but he says, pick up your cross and follow me. Now, to us, we're not offended by that. But in Jesus' day, that was a controversial statement. That would be the equivalent of me saying to you, if you want to be a member at Next Level Church, if you want to be an owner, if you want to be a part of this, then you need to take up your electric chair and follow me. You guys would say, this guy is crazy. What does that mean? Today, the cross is something that we put on necklaces or we use as art on walls. But in Jesus' day, the cross was the top form of capital punishment. The only people that went on crosses were criminals or those that were anti the Roman government. And so if you were a threat to Rome, they would put you on a cross. And Jesus predicts, he's a perfect human being who has not sinned, and he tells his disciples, I'm about to die, and the way that I'm going to die is on a cross. And if you want to follow me, you've got to take up your cross and die. Now, why is this so important? Well, I think it's so important because your number one enemy in life is you. And my number one enemy in life is me. We don't like to think this. We like to pass the blame and say, oh, it's so-and-so's fault. If they wouldn't have done that to me, then I would have been a better person. And if they would have given me that job, or if she would have liked me, or if he wouldn't have broke my heart, or if they wouldn't have done that, I would be a better person. But if we're just honest with ourselves, the real problems that we have in life are the problems that we create. That we are the problem. And so often in life, we get in our own way. And Jesus says, listen, I want to tell you something. I'm not telling you just to die. I'm telling you to die to yourself. Because if you want to get to the promised land, you got to get out of your own way. And Jesus is telling us that if we follow him, he will help us discover our purpose in this life. If we follow him, he'll help us discover our identity. If we follow him, we will find the promised land. But in order to follow him, we've got to deny ourselves and take up our cross. Follow the leader. If you're wondering how do you find your identity, if you're wondering how in the world do you find what you're following, I think there are three things that we can do. I think there's three things that we can wrestle with and ask. I think with just a little bit of introspection, I think a little bit of analyzing your life, you can find what you're following. You can find what your identity is in. You can find what is causing you so much heartache and pain and what is causing you not to know why you exist. To find your identity, I think that you need to look at the trail left by the following three things. Number one is your time. If you want to find out what your identity is in, start with looking at your time. How do you spend your time? Jesus said, if you want to be a disciple of him, you've got to follow me. So when you look at your time, does it reflect that you're following Jesus, or are you following your own time schedule? Let's just talk about this. Let's just wrestle with it for a little bit. When it comes to our busy schedules, what is the first thing to go in your life? Is it your spiritual walk? Is it the spiritual disciplines? Or is that such a priority in your life that you hold on to it no matter what's going on? I don't know about you, but when I get stressed, when life is hard, it's easy to neglect the things that I should do spiritually. And often, when I talk to other Christians and I say, hey, how's it going with reading the Bible? How's it going with praying? Oh, I really want to, but I just don't have time. So if you don't have time to follow God, your identity is found in something that you do have time for. When it comes to going to church, I get it. We're really busy. We've got a lot of things going on. There's a lot of activities. You're managing families, and there's lots of stuff going on. But when the rubber meets the road, is church the first thing to go out of your schedule? Do you easily just say, yeah, you know, I'm so busy, I don't have time to make church a priority? Well, look at what you do have time for. What are you making time for? That's where your identity is in. And it is okay if you want to find your identity in kids' sports, or if you want to find your identity in something else on the weekend, you go for it. That's great. There's no judgment here. But you need to look at Jesus' words, because what Jesus is telling us is that if your identity is in anything else but him, one day it's going to crumble. And one day all of your hope and all of your time that you've poured into something is not going to be there anymore. You're going to get older and no longer perform in the sports that you now can perform in. Or your money is going to dry up. And all that time that you spend at that job trying to make that money, you don't have it anymore. Or maybe you just pass away. Guess what? You don't take your money with you to eternity. Everything in your life is drying up. So the question is what are you spending time on? Are you spending time on things that are eternal, that make a difference in this world? And Jesus says, if you follow after me, you're a disciple. So you want to find out what your identity's in? Look at how you spend your time. Number two, your money. If you want to find what your identity is in, follow the trail left by your money. We all have limited funds. If you don't have limited funds, I would like to meet you. I would like to become your friend. We all have limited funds, right? Money is difficult. It's not like most of us are just like, I have so much money, I don't even know what to do with it. So most of us, and a lot of us, according to statistics, are living paycheck to paycheck, and you're just trying to make ends meet. And I understand that. That struggle is real. But the question is, if you follow the trail by your money, it is leading you to what you find is most important in this world. And based off your time, and then based off your money, you will find your identity. So when you do have extra money, what is your first thought with this money? Is it to stuff? Is it to clothes? Is it to new toys? There's nothing wrong with having new toys. There's nothing wrong with having stuff. The problem is when our stuff has us. And for so many of us, our identity is in what we can buy, what we can afford, what we can have. And when you cannot afford it, you become wrecked and you say, well, I want that. Everyone else has that. Why can't I have that? It is because you are wrapping your identity in something that is not eternal. Your time, your money. There's a third one, your worries. If you want to find your identity, look at the trail left by your worries. If you worry, can I just tell you, you're in good company. No one in this room doesn't worry. We all worry about something. And a lot of times in the church world, we feel really convicted and guilty about worry. But let me just tell you that worry is an emotion given to us by God. So you shouldn't feel convicted or guilty by the fact that you worry. In fact, if you didn't worry about anything, you should feel a little bit concerned about that. Because there are some things that you should worry about. The emotion of worry is nothing to feel guilty of any more than the emotion of laughing or crying. These are emotions that God gave human beings. The problem is that we worry about things that are not eternal. And so often the things that we worry about are things that aren't even going to happen. And we worry about, well, what if he says this? Or what if I don't get that job? Or what if this happens? Or what if the economy crashes? Or what if I never amount to anything? And we always worry about these what ifs. And if you follow the trail by your what ifs, it will lead you to what you found your identity in. Is your identity in your job? Is your identity in your kids? Is your identity in your spouse? Is your identity in your country? What is your identity in? Look at what you worry about. It screams at you. This is your identity. Because we're worried about things that we can't control. And we're worried about things that are slipping through our fingers. We're not worried about things that actually happen. We're worried about the what ifs. And the what ifs show what is on the throne of your heart, what has the most control over you. Our identity is something that we wrestle with. And our identity is something that when it's misplaced, it leads to all sorts of misplaced emotions. I know for me, I am still finding my identity in what it should be found in. This is a process. This isn't something you just wake up one morning and have. But I know that I've come a long way. There was a time in my life where my identity was wrapped up completely in my ability to speak to a crowd. And there were multiple times when I would give a sermon, and if my joke didn't make everyone laugh, I would go backstage after the talk, after the sermon, and I literally would put my head in my hands, and I would just say, "You blew it." And I would analyze this over and over again. It's like, why did you say that? And why didn't you deliver it better? And like hours after the sermon was over and hours after everyone had forgotten and gone home, I would be at home just beating myself up about, you didn't deliver that. I can't believe you couldn't make them laugh. Why? Because at some point in my life, my identity started to get wrapped up in my ability to perform. And I don't know the exact reason, but I have a theory. I think it comes from insecurity, that at some point in my life, to try to help people like me, to have some type of worth, I've said to myself, if I can make them laugh, then I know they like me. And so if I can't make them laugh, that must mean that they don't like me. A few years ago, actually many years ago, I was going to a new youth group at a new church that I had just got hired as the youth pastor. And my first night with the students was a night where they didn't introduce me. It wasn't at a church service. It was at a youth event, that it was a back-to-school event, and they hadn't officially announced that I was a youth pastor. They hadn't introduced me. And so I show up, and there's about 15 to 20 high school and middle school students, and none of them have a fat clue who I am. And we pile into these vans, and we go to this event. And at this event, I'm trying not to be shy, but everything is coming over me, and it's just like, I feel so shy. I feel so insecure. I feel like I just can't be myself. And at this event, if you grew up in the youth group, you know what these type of events are, these back-to-school rallies. They play all sorts of just ridiculous and silly games. Like, it involves whipped cream and Spam and just all sorts of ridiculous stuff. And they're playing these games up front, and someone's, like, turning to me and saying, "Hey, you're the youth guy, you should be up here." And I'm like, no, I don't want that to be my first impression. I don't want them thinking I'm the whipped cream guy. I'm just going to hang out right here, and I'm not going to participate. When we left, I remember I got into my car at the end of the event, and I drove back to my dorm, and as I left, I had this thought. It was a reoccurring thought. It just kept going over and over again, that all I need to do is preach to the students, and if I can just preach to the students, then they'll like me. Because if I preach, then I'll make them laugh, and then I'll connect with them, and I just got to get to a place where I can preach to them, because then they'll like me, as if to say, the only worth I have in this world is my ability to speak. But let me tell you, I am worth more than a sermon. And for you, maybe it's not a sermon, maybe it's not your ability to speak, but maybe it is your looks. And let me just tell you, you are more than your looks. Or maybe for you, it's your ability to perform at your job at a high level. And let me just tell you, you are more than a job. Maybe it's your gifted or your abilities. Maybe it's your strengths, and you are more than the God-given abilities that you have. You are put on this earth for something great, and it is more than anything you can see. And you only... We'll let you clap for that. Some of you are testing my ability to see you. I see you not clapping. I see you not participating. My identity is not in your ability to clap. I'm going to still feel like this was a decent talk, even though you didn't clap. Your identity, though. Your identity is wrapped up into something. And it's fed you this lie that says, this is all there is. This is why I'm here. And for some of you, as a mom, it's your ability to perform as a mom. And I keep hearing moms talk about this thing called mom guilt. It is real. Apparently, every woman that has kids is struggling with mom guilt. And let me just throw something out to you. If you successfully got your kids to church and they are not naked, you are a successful mom. So tell that mom guilt to go to hell. You are more than your ability to keep up with the moms on Pinterest. There's more to you. And the only way you discover it is by looking at what you're following. Because if you're following your abilities and your gifts, they're going to let you down. And when they do, you are crushed. But when you follow Jesus, you see he looks at you like you're his child, like you're his prized possession. He's not judging you based off your appearance, based off your productivity, based off what you can do. He's like, you are my child. Come on, let's go. Let's do this. Follow me. Your identity is formed by who or what you follow. Your identity is formed by who or what you follow. And Jesus makes a case for why it's so important to follow him. And he does so by the next verse. Look at what Jesus says in Matthew 16, 25 through 26. He says, for whoever wants to save their life will lose it, but whoever loses their life for me will find it. What good will it be for someone to gain the whole world yet forfeit their soul? Or what can anyone give in exchange for their soul? What is Jesus saying? Well, Jesus is saying that, you know, your stuff, it doesn't care about your soul. And your boss doesn't care about your soul. And your kids, and based on how great of a parent you are, they don't care about your soul. You know what we care about as humans? We care about how we treat each other. And it's a little bit of a broken system. But the way that we live in this world is, if you perform, if you're good to me, then I'll be good to you. If you're nice to me, I'll be nice to you. That's the way our system works. If you compliment me, I'll compliment you. And Jesus breaks down that system and he says, listen, I don't care about your performance because I know your performance is broken. I know you're not perfect. What I care about is your soul. And so follow after me and you'll get something eternal. Everyone else is just judging you based on how good you are or how good your last performance was or what you can do for them. And Jesus says, I don't care about that. I care about your soul. Your soul is eternal. And at the end of the day, when you age and you don't have your looks anymore, you will still have your soul. And at the end of the day, when you can't perform at your job anymore, you will still have your soul. And at the end of the day, when your kids move out of the house and they're not calling you anymore, you will still have your soul. You are worth so much more than what you can do because you are not just a body, you are a soul. And Jesus says, follow after me and I'll help you discover your soul. What good is it to gain a whole world and yet forfeit your soul? What good is it if you get the most likes on Facebook if you're not taking care of your soul? What good is it if someone tells you you're the most beautiful person in the world if you're not taking care of your soul? What does it matter if you have the most success at your job? Your job's going to fade. You can't take your job with you to eternity, but you do take your soul. And Jesus says, whoever wants to save their life will lose it. How do you lose it? Well, you get out of your own way. And you stop following what you're most passionate about and what you think is going to make you happy, and you start following Jesus. And you say, Jesus, where do you want me to go? What do you say about me? Where do you want me? How do you want me to act? How do you want me to live? Jesus, I'm following you. I am all in for you. I want to follow you and hear what you say about me because I know that you care about my soul. You don't just care about if I perform or if I'm kind of good or decent or if I make some money. You don't care about that. You care about my soul, so I'm going to follow you and let everything pass away and die.
What good is it to gain a whole world and yet forfeit our souls? To close, I want to give you an application. And the application is your part. It's what you're supposed to do. It's simply this. Based off your time, money, and worries, what is your identity formed in? And this is the part where you have to wrestle with it. You have to do some analyzing and thinking. Based off, be honest with yourself. Don't give the Sunday school answer where you just say Jesus for all of these, right? Be real. Based off your time and your money and your worries, what are you following? If you want to follow something other than Jesus, there's no judgment here. You just need to know that whatever you're following is going to crumble unless it's Jesus, because Jesus is eternal. He's been here yesterday, today, and forever. Everything else is fading away. So what are you forming your identity in? And the last part of that is, what will it take to form your identity in Jesus alone? He's worth it because he cares about our soul. Will you guys pray with me? God, thank you so much for the fact that you allow imperfect and unholy and messed up people to follow you. And God, we just ask right now that you would just be healing our souls. God, for some of us, we have such wounds and such baggage because we've been basing our worth off of our performance or off what other people say or how other people treat us. And God, would you just help us to die to those things? Would you help us to know that we have worth because we are your kid? And would you help us when we forget that, God, would you help us to die to ourselves, to die to our own talents and our own dreams, and just trust that you have bigger dreams for us than anything we could ask or imagine? Would you help us to die to our selfishness and to follow you? God, would you give us the strength that we need? Thank you for loving us unconditionally. Thank you for loving us not based off our worth, but based off who we are, that we are your kids. We thank you for that. We thank you for what you're doing in our hearts and our souls today.